But this morning we are going to look at Job, the man from Uz. Now Uz is not a common town. Some would suggest that since he was from the land of Uz, that he lived sometime after Abraham, because it was one of Abraham's nephews was named Uz. He had a brother named Buz and some other siblings as well. And eight of them, in fact, that Milcah bore to Abraham's brother Nahor. And interesting thing about those eight, if you read in the right translation, it says, these eight did milk a bear. It doesn't really mean they milked a bear, but their mother's name was Milcah, and she bore them. But if you read it just right, it sounds like they milked a bear, and that's always a fun one. But you have to write, I think it's the, maybe the New American Standard, something like that. I know it's only one translation that words it just that way, but it's always a fun one. These eight milked a bear. But as we look at Job is an interesting character. When we think about, and if I asked you, and you know, maybe I should have done this before I put the name up there on the screen and told you who we were talking about, but who would you think of when we talk about the most righteous people in the Bible? When we think about the most righteous of people in the Bible, obviously, you know, of course, we know Jesus. He was perfect. But not counting him, but just of your average human being, who was the most righteous? Well, Ezekiel names three for us that he puts in a special category. And Job is one of those three. In fact, two times in Ezekiel chapter 14, in verses 14 and in verse 20, Ezekiel says that God is speaking of how he's going to destroy the land and he's going to bring catastrophe upon them. And he says, even if Noah and Daniel, who was a contemporary of Ezekiel's day, and so the people Ezekiel was talking to would have known Daniel, he was their living example of their day. But then he mentioned Noah, then Daniel, and Job. And he says, even if these three men lived in this city, all they would be able to do would be save their own skin. They wouldn't be able to save a son or a daughter or a wife. They would be able to only save themselves. That's how angry God was at that nation and at that city at that time and those people. But he mentions Job right there with Noah. And, of course, Daniel, he mentions. I believe Daniel specifically was mentioned because he was alive in that day. But Noah and Job would probably be two that would come to mind for us. You know, some might think, well, you know, there was Abraham was the father of the faithful. But he wasn't always extremely righteous in his actions. He trusted God, but he still did a lot of things that he shouldn't, like to that deal with Hagar. That wasn't something he should have done. And it caused a lot of problems for him as a result of that. But Noah and Job both have some wonderful things spoken of them about God. About them by God. Let me rephrase that. Job is only mentioned one time in the New Testament. In James chapter 5 and verses 10 and 11. It says, take my brethren the prophets who have spoken in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering, affliction, and of patience, the King James says. Some other translations say endurance. Behold, we count them happy which endure. You have heard of, again the King James says, the patience of Job. Other translations will say the endurance of Job. And I mentioned that, we talked a little bit in class about it, I'll mention it again, why. And you have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is full of pity and tender mercy. And the reason I mention that it says patience in the King James, but other translations say endurance. The reason I mention that is this. We do have that odd sense of what patience is. We talked about in our adult class this morning when we talked about Job. You see, patience is a hunter sitting in the woods quietly waiting for the deer. A patience is the fisherman or fisherwoman sitting out there with the line in the water waiting patiently and quietly. That's the way we picture it. But endurance is the woman who's giving birth. She's not quiet about it most of the time. I don't know. I've only experienced one person giving birth, my wife, but I don't imagine she's that unusual. A woman giving birth endures it, and she makes it through, but she's not just sitting peacefully and quietly waiting for it to happen. She's going to complain about it while it's happening, maybe even yell and scream a good bit while that's taking place. There's a lot of pain and suffering involved with that, and that's what we see with Job. He didn't just sit patiently, hey, well, I'll just wait till this is over, let me be quiet and wait. He was complaining, he was discussing with his friends and arguing with them, and he was talking about how horrible his life was, even to the point that he thought he should have never been born, and it would have been better if he hadn't been born, and those kinds of things. And so when we read this word patience in the King James Version, we need not think about the hunter sitting quietly in the woods waiting for the deer to come by. We need to think instead about the person who is suffering great affliction and is very vocal about it. So we looked at Job 1:1-5 because we want to look at this man from Uz. And we're going to look beyond that, obviously, not just focus on those five verses. But first we want to look at Job's righteousness. The way Job is described by God, and I dare say none of us here could probably be described this way. I mean, we're striving for this, but Job was a special individual. Listen to how he's described. He's described as perfect and upright, one that fears God, and the King James says, eschewed evil. Another way of wording those things is that he was one who was true and unblemished. He was a sincere and upright man who feared God and kept evil at a distance. He kept every wicked thing at a distance from him. He didn't even want to get close to evil. That's what eschewed evil meant. It's kind of like saying he shooed it away, we might say. But he kept it at a distance. He didn't want to have anything to do with anything that was evil. That's certainly a good standard for us to strive for. We often fall short of that. There are often some wicked things that we like to get a little closer to than we should. And we need to be aware of that. It's a dangerous thing, but it is something that Job didn't do. He wanted to stay far, far away from evil. But Job's righteousness is spoken of. God brags to Satan about what a wonderful righteous person Job is. I dare say that puts you on the spot if God bragged about you like that. I think of Paul bragging about the people in Corinth to those of Macedonia, how the Corinthians wanted to give to the needs of the saints, and they really were excited about it. He bragged about it, and he said, now when we come, y'all better have your gift ready, or it's going to make us look bad, because we've already bragged to other people about how good you were. Can you imagine if the story of Job had been that Job gave up and abandoned God and denied God, and Satan was right about him? That would have looked bad for God, because God had bragged about him. But Job came through for God. He was exactly who God said he was. And we talked about in class this morning, that's what Job had, that integrity. He had that confidence. He said, he's going to try me, but I'm going to come through it like gold comes through the fire. And so Job had that righteousness. Unfortunately, not everyone felt the same way about it that he did. Let's consider just for a moment Job's wealth. We saw there he had 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and a very great household. We're not even told how many servants that he had. In fact, it says in verse 3 that he was the greatest of all the men in the East. He was the richest guy. I've seen some maps of the United States where it tells who's the richest person in each state. You know, things like that. You know, this is the wealthiest one. Well, if they had done one of those in Job's day, if you had taken the whole East, not just one town or something, you know, we always know, oh, there's the richest fellow in town right there. Job was the wealthiest in all of the East. Not just in his town or his little local area, but in the whole part of the world that he lived in, he was the wealthiest. And that's quite an accomplishment for him. And we see the kinds of numbers here. They don't really mean a lot to us. Okay, well, 7,000 sheep, is that a lot? It's a lot. We don't think about things in that way. We don't have that kind of wealth. We don't keep it in cattle for a lot of it. Certainly not in sheep and camels and oxen and donkeys. We might see somebody who has some cattle, some cows, and maybe horses, but we don't keep the same kinds of things that they kept. But the fact that it does say he's the greatest of all those people in that whole area, he was rich. He was rich beyond those around him. God had blessed him so much because of his righteousness. And that, of course, is one of the things that is thrown in his face later when other things happen. Let's consider Job's family. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters. And they were all grown. They would have, they apparently seemed to get along quite well together. They would all have their parties on their own day, and they'd take turns having a get-together for the rest of their brothers and sisters. And they would invite them, and they would have a celebration. And Job, of course, was concerned about him. We see that Job was apparently worshiping under the patriarchal system. We talked about that in class. They didn't have to go to a temple or a tabernacle or some place and go to a priest. Job acted as the family priest, which was the way things worked in the patriarch days. That's the way Abraham did it. That's the way Noah did it. And so that puts Job in that time frame of those kinds of people, the time frames of Noah and Abraham before the law of Moses. But his family seemed to have been a good family. His children seemed to have been following in his footsteps, but he was concerned just in case they weren't. He would always offer a sacrifice to make sure that God would be favorable toward them. And then, of course, we read about Job's loss. You know, when you don't have anything, it doesn't hurt sometimes to lose it because there wasn't anything to start with. I dare say for me to go bankrupt wouldn't be nearly as tough as if President Trump went bankrupt or if Bill Gates went bankrupt. It'd probably hit them a lot harder than it would hit me. I mean, not that I want to do that, but, you know, the less you have, the less it would affect you because the less you lose. The richest man in the East became one of the poorest. He lost his family. Those sons and daughters were killed. He lost all of those sheep and camels and oxen and donkeys. He lost all of his servants. Everything was destroyed. All of that wealth was gone. And Job shows us the importance of not building your life and building your foundation for your life on wealth. If Job's foundation had been built around the things that he had, when he lost it all, he would have lost his faith. He would have lost his foundation. If his foundation had been his family, you know, there's nothing more important than family. There better be. There better be something more important than family to you. And it better be God. Job lost his family. If they had been the only thing that mattered, if they had been the most important thing in his life, he would have crumbled. But his foundation was God. Now, that's not to say that family is not important. It is. But we have to put God first. And that's what Job did. That's what made him righteous and perfect and upright. And that's what made him different than most of us. We struggle with putting God at the very center of our lives, of letting Him be the foundation, and of our faith in Him being what keeps us going. Job lost it all, but he didn't lose God. And then, of course, there was Job's disease. After God allowed Satan to wipe out all of Job's wealth, God then allowed Satan to go back and afflict Job personally with physical ailments. And Job had to suffer. And it was so bad. I mean, I don't know, I've had some uncomfortable diseases or different things in my life. I've never been to the point where Job was. He had these sores and boils all over him. In fact, he had changed so much that his friends didn't even recognize him when they came to see him. Who is this guy? This isn't the Job we knew. You ever met somebody that had changed so much you couldn't recognize them? That's what happened to Job because of his disease. And in this disease and in this difficulty, it was so bad. It itched and burned and hurt so bad, these boils that he had all over him from the top of his head to the sole of his feet, that he took a piece of broken pottery and scraped at the sores on his body. Have you ever had one of those? I've got an itch today, right back here on my back, right where I can barely reach it. And it all day, but just a little itch. Y'all are all going to have itches now for the rest of the sermon. See what I did there? But, you know, just that itch that just won't go away, and you scratch it, and it just scratching it just makes it itch more. Job suffered with that, and the pain and the agony of it, in addition to the loss of all of those things that he had and his family, he also lost his health. And that's what Satan had said. Oh, but God, a man will give up anything for his health. And so he said, you let me get Job sick and he'll curse you. But he didn't. Because even Job's own life wasn't what was most dear to him. God was. And we need to follow that example. And then, of course, there's Job's wife. This is the one person in his family that some might say maybe he wished she had been the one that died instead of all the children. But I think sometimes we give Job's wife a hard time. Remember, Job's wife had suffered all of the same losses that he had. She didn't have the disease, the sickness that he suffered, but she lost her children. She lost her wealth. And she too. Then she also was looked to be losing her husband. He's sick. Looks like he's about to die. She's suffered a lot. And we pick on her sometimes. Oh, you know, what kind of woman was she? She was more like the rest of us. Job was an amazing person. Job's wife, she's a lot like you and me. She just tells Job, why don't you just curse God and die? And Job said, you're starting to talk like one of the foolish women now. Now it is interesting. After all of these things occurred, later on, after he makes it through this, he did make it through these things. He didn't die from them. He is dead now, though, in case you were wondering. But he made it through these things. And when he did, you know, I would have divorced her after that. But no, he didn't. He stuck with her because that was the kind of guy he was. He was faithful to her. He was faithful to God. But he stuck with her even after she told him he ought to just curse God and die. He said, that's a foolish thing to say. Don't say things like that. And he rebuked her for it. But Job's wife, that's the only time we read about her. We don't read about her any time in the rest of the book. But then there were Job's friends. Job's friends started out pretty good. They, like any good friend, came to visit when he was sick and when he'd had a calamity in his life. That's what we do for our friends. We go see them. If they're in the hospital or if they've lost a loved one, things like that, we go to see those friends. We talk to them. We try to comfort them. And Job's friends came and they did just that for a while. They were sympathetic to him at first. They sat and they mourned with him. Notice a few of the things that people did. You know, they would mourn by weeping. They would tear their clothes and sprinkle dust on their heads and ashes and things like that. You know, they'd lift up their voice and cry aloud. Well, Job's friends came and at first they just sat with him. Sometimes when people face problems that seem insurmountable, and we say, I don't know what to say, that's okay. Don't. Just be there. While Job's friends were just there with him, not saying anything, they were a comfort to him. When they opened their mouths, it went downhill. They stopped being a comfort to him at that point. Job's friends came. They were sympathetic at first. They wanted, and even in their things that they were saying, they were trying to help. Their theology was wrong. What they knew about God, or thought they knew about God, was not right. They thought God was punishing Job because he was wicked, and they were wrong. But they, you know, if you have a friend who you think is doing something wicked, shouldn't you try to correct them and get them to do what's right? And that's what they were trying to do. They thought they were trying to help. They thought, Job's done something bad and we don't want him to die having sinned against God. We want him to straighten up and do right so God will bless him again. But they didn't know what was really going on. And then, of course, Job is accused. Satan had accused him of only serving God to get stuff. Now his friends start accusing him of all sorts of things. If you read through the entire section of the things that his friends accuse him of doing, you'd think, well, if my friends thought that about me, they accuse him of everything from stealing to being unfaithful to his wife to cursing God, to harboring the wicked, to, you know, cheating and stealing and killing. I mean, they just say all sorts of wicked things. So we don't know what it is you've done, Job, but you must have done one of these really bad things. Baseless accusations. They had no proof, no evidence, nothing to even indicate that he had done these things except that he's suffering. So he must have done something. And he wasn't, you know, if he'd have lost one child, they would have probably said, wow, you must have done something kind of bad. But he lost all his children and all his wealth, and he was sick. Oh, Job, you must have really done a lot of bad stuff. They thought, they equated how much you suffered with how many bad things you did. Sometimes we do that too. We make that mistake. We think that God will protect you and bless you and give you all sorts of good things if you're doing righteous and nothing bad will ever happen to you. But if you're doing wrong things, then God's going to punish you and bad things are going to happen to you. You know, sometimes the wicked prosper in this world. We don't like to admit that, but sometimes that happens. Sometimes the wickedness doesn't catch up with them until judgment day. And sometimes the good die young. Sometimes, like Jesus, the innocent suffer. We talked about Eliphaz this morning in class. He said, well, no one ever died being innocent. He asked us a question. Who ever died being innocent? Nobody. Oh, yeah. The innocent die sometimes. The innocent suffer sometimes. But they misunderstood. And so Job is accused of all manner of evil. And of course then, Job's arguments. Job has to defend himself. He has to say, now wait a minute. If I've ever done any of these things, in fact, Job, here, you want to know how rich Job was? I don't know, you know, I know we live in several different towns in the area. Think about the town you live in or near. I know some of us live out in the country. But think about the town you live nearest. What, you know, no matter how small it is. You know, I live out near Mineral Bluff. Can you imagine how wealthy I would have to be able to say, you know, no one in Mineral Bluff has ever gone to bed hungry or had to not have a good place to sleep because I would provide it for them if they needed it. Can you imagine the kind of wealth that, and you know, and then you get into bigger, can you imagine in a bigger town? Now, Blue Ridge is a good bit bigger than Mineral Bluff. Can you imagine somebody in Blue Ridge saying, you know, nobody in Blue Ridge has ever been hungry, has ever had to go to bed hungry, has ever not had, you know, a bed to sleep, because I took care of it. That's what Job said. In his arguments, he said, no one where I live has ever gone hungry because I fed them. No one has ever gone without a place to sleep because I provided them. How rich was this guy that he could provide for everyone in his community food and shelter and clothing, the necessities of life? That lets us know a little bit about Job's wealth. But we see so much about Job's argument. Some of the things that Job says reveal some things to us that we never would have known otherwise. Job talks about the concept of a resurrection. He talks about the fact that even though he thinks he's dying, he said, my Redeemer lives, and I'm going to see Him. Even if I die, yet I'll see Him. He believed that there was a resurrection that was to come. We see even some mentions that indicate the idea of this Redeemer, of this idea of someone coming to rescue him. And there's an image of Christ there in that as well. That Christ is our Redeemer that came to rescue us. And then, of course, we meet Job's God. That's the real God, of course. It wasn't the God that his friends pictured. It wasn't the God that they described. This is the real God. Job's God is the God we read about in the Bible. A God who, yes, sometimes he corrects and punishes the wicked and expects them to repent and turn from it. And he certainly disciplines his children, but also is merciful and gracious, but also is very powerful. We see him when he arrives in the whirlwind, and he is not someone to be trifled with. Job, time and again, claims, oh, well, if God would come and stand here like a man, I'd argue with him. I'd present my evidence to him, and he'd have to answer me. And when God showed up, all Job had to say was, I'm sorry, I didn't know what I was talking about. That's all he had to say. That's all he could say. Hey, I can't answer. I don't have any idea. We talked about Job 38 in class. Go read that. Read those questions and see how many of them you know the answer to. See how many of them our scientists, well, they think they know the answer to some of them, but they don't. When God shows up, He reveals Himself just a little bit. I mean, it's just a little bit of His power. But He shows that. And then there's Job's vindication. When God arrives, He vindicates Job. When we think about what Job's friends had said about him and what Job had said about himself, we have to wonder, who was right? Oh, they're arguing this and Job's arguing this. They can't both be right. Well, we kind of got the hint back in the beginning when God had said, Job's righteous. He didn't say, I'm punishing Job because he's been bad. He said, Job is righteous and upright. Well, after it was all said and done, here's what the Bible says happened. The Lord turned toward Eliphaz the Temanite and said, My anger is stirred up against you and your two friends because you have not spoken about me what is right as my servant Job has. Job is God's servant too. What a good compliment that is. And then he says, so now take 7 bulls and 7 rams and go to my servant Job and offer a burnt offering for yourselves. And my servant Job will intercede for you, and I will respect him so that I do not deal with you according to your folly, because you have not spoken about me what is right as my servant Job has. And so that's what they did. Now there are some people who say, well, we're not really sure. You know, they both made some interesting arguments and neither one of them was right all the time. Yeah, God says, Job said what was right about me. Was God testing Job and trying him? Yes. Did Job come through it like gold through the fire? Yes. Was Job innocent? Yes. God says, Job was right. You guys were wrong. He hasn't done anything. In fact, you better take your sacrifice and let him offer it to me, because if you offered it, I probably wouldn't accept it from you. But I'll accept it from him if he'll come. And so that's what they did, and that's what Job did. And the Lord had respect for Job when he made that offering for them. But then, also at the end, we see Job's restoration. And when we think of restoration, we think, oh, well, maybe he was wrong and he came back. No, it's God restoring to Job the things that he had before. And in fact, more than the things that he had before, he gave him double of everything except the wives and children. You don't need double of that. One wife is plenty. And 10 children, I'm sure, is more than enough. 5's plenty. 10. So he gave him also 7 sons and 3 daughters. And I always loved those names. I really, really wanted to name one of our girls Jemima, after Job's daughter, so that when she grew up and her brothers and sisters had kids, that she'd be Aunt Jemima. My wife wouldn't go for that. But she did let me name one of them Keziah. But what they find out is, nowhere in all the land could women be found who were as beautiful as Job's daughters. He didn't just get daughters and sons. He got the most beautiful daughters and those sons. Doesn't say much about his sons, though. And after this, so after all that, he'd already had a family, lost that family, got another family, and then after this, he lived another 140 years. This is another thing that helps us see that Job lived during the time of the patriarchs, when people lived a lot longer than they did by the time of Moses. Moses lived to 120, and he was old compared to everybody else around. And so he lived way before that, because he had already raised a family and lost them by the time, and then he still lived another 140 years, saw his children and their children to the 4th generation. You know, when you are tested by God and come through it like gold through the fire, like Job, God will bless you. Now here's the thing, and what Job's not trying to teach us is that those blessings are always going to be physical blessings. God blesses us spiritually as well. The greatest blessing that God can give us is eternal life. If you're here this morning, and maybe you haven't been living like Job, maybe you've failed some of those tests and haven't come through it like gold, the good news is that can be overcome. You can be restored and have salvation restored to you. If you're not a Christian and you've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, you can do that. You can have your sins washed away. And you can be forgiven of all of them, because the Lord is full of pity and mercy. Believe in Him and confess Jesus as the Christ after repenting of your sins. You can be buried with Him in baptism to wash those sins away. If you're here and you are a Christian, but perhaps you've allowed some evil to slip into your heart or into your life, and you need to get that back out so that you, like Job, can Shoo that evil away. Keep it away at a distance. All those wicked things. If you have a need to respond, please do so as we stand and as we sing.